I'm Dustin Zahn, and this is Trainwrecks. Be sure to check out other episodes on all your favorite streaming platforms. Follow the podcast on Instagram at trainwrecks.69. Like and subscribe, leave reviews, tell a friend, and come to my shows. All right, welcome back. Life has been good for me lately. I've had some killer shows recently. In the past couple weeks, I was in Essen for GoToBunker's 19-year anniversary. That was a lot of fun to stretch out and play 4 hours in a nice little club. It's got a cool sound system, great staff, and you know the DJs, the local DJs are really good. So if you're looking for something a little different and you're in that area of Germany, give it a shot. The next day, I flew to New York for my return to basement. That was a super fun night. My last couple New York shows were focused on vibey techno, and I did a house set at Public Records. So on this one, it was really fun to beat the hell out of it again. And for those asking, I have not moved to New York. I've been in town quite a bit recently, but I'm still in Berlin and will be probably for the foreseeable future. And then after that, last weekend, I played a closing slot at Pax Romana in Amsterdam. That was a fantastic party. I got a chance to stretch out again musically. And that's the nice thing about closing sets. You can take a little bit more risks, and the rewards, the payoffs can be a little higher. As the morning went on, the party got a little more messy and energetic. So it just added to the excitement, and I really enjoyed playing. So thanks to the PAX crew. They're actually taking the show on the road to New York next week. They'll be collaborating with Merge, so if hot, sweaty, queer-friendly parties are your vibe, buy the ticket and take the ride. Coming up, I'm at Berghain again next weekend on May 24th or 5th, whatever that Sunday is. That's going to be a long night if you get my drift. It's actually a holiday weekend, which is Pentecost. If you don't know what that is, it's okay because nobody does. The following weekend, on the 30th, I'm in Dortmund at Trezor West. I've heard so much good feedback about the club recently that I'm really looking forward to checking that one out. Seems like everybody I talk to has nothing but good things to say. And then finally, you know, no touring for me in June. I'll be putting final touches on a bunch of music that'll come out after the summer. And just handling the final preparations for the Great Beyond. By the way, tickets for the Great Beyond Festival are sold out. However, resale tickets are occasionally available at our official ticketing link. It's really based on the supply, you know. Head over to greatbeyond.us for more info. If you aren't aware, I co-founded an outdoor three-day music festival 6 years ago called the Great Beyond. It's based in Minnesota and places a heavy emphasis on psychedelic techno and house music with a 1,000 person capacity. Past guests include Planetary Assault System, Sandwell District, Rod Hod, DJ Nobu, Rose, Aris Drew, and Daniel Bell. This year, we've invited names like Devious One, Surgeon, and of course, as always, Wada Igarashi. Speaking of the Great Beyond, today's guest is playing a peak time slot at 1 a.m. on Saturday night this year. Her name's Philippa Pacho. She's been on the show before, but you know I like to have old friends on repeatedly, so she's back. If you don't know who she is, she's one of the fastest rising DJs in Europe. In the past year or two, she's also made her way over to Asia and the Americas. So now she's all of our problem. Her style is driving and pure and minimalistic. If you'd like to find out more after this episode, check out her first appearance. That was on episode number 62 alongside Blue Hour. In addition to kicking ass behind the decks and being a good hang, she also started a new record label recently called Forum and still runs the label Positive Source alongside her partner Blue Hour, friend of the show. But that's enough rambling for now. Let's get her into the new studio. Okay, it's my living room, but please welcome Philippa Pacho. All right, welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
You're in my actual house this time.
Yes.
Yeah. Before was the whatever makeshift flat studio thing. So was there a bunch of like scooters and shit out by the front door or whatever?
What, here?
Yeah.
Not that I notice.
Okay. Because, like, it's pretty chill over here, but sometimes there's just too many damn scooters. Like, yeah. 'Cause of the kids and everything.
No, it was pretty chill. I think it's the weather. It's like 13 degrees. No one is out. No one's taking their scooter. It was almost too cold.
Yeah, that's true.
Cycling here, so.
Because sometimes you just got to step over these damn things, and it's like,
yeah.
Tell these kids just to shove them up their ass. I shouldn't say that about 14-year-olds, but.
Yeah, you should. You know,
I feel like I'm not the old man in yelling at the clouds in the neighborhood, but I'm getting there, so.
Oh, me too. And I'm not, like, I'm in my mid-30s, and I'm noticing that I sometimes want to tell other kids off. Because I feel like kids are, patience with kids in general is starting to get smaller and smaller.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. If you don't like have them in your life regularly, it starts to get smaller. Yes. Otherwise, you have no choice but to expand the patience there. So, but it's kind of hard to believe it's been 2 years since we did this last time.
Oh, was it 2 years?
Yeah, I had to look it up today.
Damn.
Time flies, right?
Lots have happened.
I know. Let's hear about it. Yeah. What have you been up to? Having fun?
I've been having loads of fun, touring a lot, starting my second label. That's been going really well and that I've been enjoying working on a lot. And just touring loads every weekend, basically, sometimes 3 to 4 gigs a week. So it's been pretty crazy.
Is there been any like specific location or tour that is like really stuck out to you positively? Let's say more than others, because I'm sure you have plenty of.
Definitely. I've been going to Asia every year since a couple of years, and I have to say that the scene in places like Singapore is it's pretty epic. Also Taipei, whoa, the stuff that's happening there, I'm pretty
really?
Mind blown actually.
What's happening?
They have various, if we take Taipei as an example, they have various clubs there. One of them is Pawn Shop that I've been playing at 3 times, 4 times. Can't remember. Last time I was there was just 2 months ago, and I did like an extended 6-hour set. Just the crowd there is super cool. It's like Pawn Shop is like a, I would say almost like a replica of Berghain. Obviously, it's way smaller, but the euphoria and the hedonism, and you know, you have amazing Function One sound system, door policy. Like, you wouldn't expect, or I didn't expect something like that to exist in a city like Taipei. Every time I come back there, I'm so excited. And I mean, it's such a long trip it takes forever to get there. And also just being in Taipei, they have amazing food culture and stuff like that. So I would say Taipei is definitely one of my top 5 cities to go to play and to visit.
That's a cool answer, because a lot of times you hear the usual Tokyo and all that, which, you know, of course I love absolutely too, but
same, definitely I love playing in Tokyo, but I would say Taipei is like, if you ever get an opportunity to visit or to DJ, do it, you will not regret it. They also have, the organizers behind Pawn Shop also have a festival called Organic.
Okay, I've heard of that.
Yeah, and it takes place, I think, like an hour outside Taipei, close to like a coastal. It's like in this, by the water, basically. It looks quite dramatic, and it looks pretty epic, to be honest. So I would also, it's on my bucket list. I would love to just go there as a guest and experience that festival.
Do you get to stick around at all, or are you getting home right away?
No. Because it's so far away from Berlin, where I live, I always make an effort to stay at least 5 days. There's like lots of great museums there, and I mean the food is just delicious. It's so epic, and they have a really interesting history also in Taiwan. So it just has this like, mysteriousness, and people are super friendly, and obviously the geopolitics between Taiwan and China is, you know, the thing that a lot of people are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, you know, if you talk to someone from Taipei, they're like, yeah, if it happens, it happens. We don't think it will happen, but what can you do?
Yeah. I mean, that's the same as like, you know, the big one in California, the earthquake that will unexpectedly break it off into the ocean. And people are just like, that might happen. It probably will. Yeah. Hopefully not when I'm alive.
I forgot about that. You know, they're also expecting one in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually saw a documentary about that like a week ago about the
next. It's fresh.
Yeah, so I am. I'm gonna go to Tokyo end of this year and hopefully.
Well, if you ever want to stay awake at night, check out. I'm sure there's plenty of them documentaries about the super volcanoes. Like, there's tons of them around the planet that annihilate us all.
Yeah. Oh God, I find that scary. Also, there's too many. I feel like my existential anxiety is just peaking right now with all this stuff that's going on everywhere.
Yeah, those feelings come and go a little bit. There's times you're just like, ah, fuck it, I'm gonna have another glass of wine, and there's other times where it really will keep you up at night. You know? Speaking of bad shit, what about like bad trips? Are there any of them that are interesting or funny that have been worth mentioning?
What do you mean by bad trips?
Just like,
don't go to this city. Don't go to that club.
No, I mean, you don't want to. But like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, you know, you got obviously the plane didn't go down, but maybe you had to whip a UE or something.
I did have a traumatic flight experience not that long ago where I was supposed to fly to Munich. I mean, yeah, and the landing gears apparently the pilot was like, yeah, well, we're having some malfunctioning with the landing gears. We can't guarantee a safe landing. And I mean, it was like a whole ordeal. We were in the air for 3-something hours. It was supposed to be an hour flight. A fighter jet joined us in the sky to take pictures and measure, or like take the pictures to send to Lufthansa Technique on the ground so they could measure whether the landing gear were down or not. I mean, it was just like the pilots were pretty cool about experiencing the entire, you know, because they have obviously a security routine, but that was so fucking scary, man.
And, oh my God.
We had to like brace.
Oh, you did all that?
Yeah.
Did they like say, okay, here's some internet you can call or like anybody? Or?
Oh, I killed that one.
Yes, yeah, sorry about that.
I managed to kill that one. Muff. So it was quite funny because the guy that was sitting next to me, he was like, because you know, when you're flying with Lufthansa, you always get like a Lindt chocolate at the end of the flight.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, if we're anyways gonna die, why don't you just throw away the chocolates on us? Because we're pretty hungry anyways. And like the way he said it was so funny. Like
I would have said that.
And the stewardesses, they were pretty stressed out of this entire, you know, experience. Yeah. Everyone was. And they just like throw chocolate at us, and it sort of brightened the entire mood on the airplane. But other than that, I mean, no, things have been pretty smooth. I mean, sure, you have like some cities that are less exciting to go to. I won't mention them.
Yeah, fair.
And of course, you have like some less exciting shows and stuff. But I mean, obviously traveling, you sort of, the only thing that sort of, I've been thinking about a lot lately is like you spend so much time on an airplane or train for like a 2-hour set. Like the amount of hours you actually spend not DJing is because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh my God, it must be so amazing for you to travel. And yeah, it is in many ways, but it's also, you know, the traveling aspect is a that's a job.
Well, that's one of the things I was going to ask, is if you learned any like hard lessons since we last spoke, and it seems like that's a very fair one. I mean, even if it's well, I guess it's different, because if it's like a business person that's going for meetings and stuff, that's kind of a full business day anyway.
Yeah.
8 hours. Whereas, yeah, I mean, with the club, you might only be there for two.
Yeah.
But you're traveling a whole day. And while that can be fun, it ends up being a lot of time in complete discomfort.
Oh, definitely. Now, especially, I feel like you have less and less right as a passenger. Like, you're not allowed to bring your cabin bag. It's, you know, only 8 kilograms per cabin bag.
Yeah, like, it's everything's just crazy.
Ridiculous. It's like, even if you're traveling with this sort of premium airlines. But yeah, it's DJ complaining.
Yeah, but I think it's fair, because it's like you have a service where it's like it used to be more comfortable and whatever and much cheaper. And now it's like they're really squeezing anything out of it. And then they charge you out the ass. And then at the end of the flight, they have the balls to be like, oh, thank you for choosing us. I'm like, I didn't have a choice, asshole.
Yeah, exactly. No, the thing that I really dislike is like your cabin bag isn't even guaranteed on the airplane. Like when you have to like force check it in. And so many times I've been having like fights with them. Like I don't want to. But I'm not I feel worse for our friends who are DJing with records. And I can just bring my USB sticks in my, I keep all of that in my rucksack and never keep that in my cabin bag. And it's just annoying when you arrive at the airport then and you have to wait for the cabin bag to, because you're running out of, you don't have a lot of time. Oftentimes you have to go straight to a club or whatever. So,
I mean, that's most of the reason why I stopped bringing records on top of the record bag, just getting lost on occasion.
Yeah. When did you stop playing records?
I mean, I still bring them out in Berlin and like, maybe things that are easy to get to by car or train, but stop with flying records. It was probably 2017, 18. But I mean, like I buy too many damn records. This little office room right here is full of them. I need to get rid of a bunch.
Yeah.
And basically I still, everything I buy, I rip and I play off USB, because there's a lot of cool stuff that you just can't get on even Bandcamp or Beatport.
Oh, yeah.
So
definitely.
And I hate to admit it, but I do like shopping therapy. It goes surprisingly far.
Yeah.
Especially as you get a little older, it's nice to fill voids in your life with useless shit.
Oh, hell yes. I mean, don't ask my husband. He thinks I'm a pro at that. Oh, my God, this weather. What is happening?
If you can hear on the microphones, I'm not sure it's picking up, but it's pouring rain, and she came over on her bicycle, so we'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
One thing we were talking about earlier that, we're not, first class is nice, but what we both appreciate is adult-only flights.
Yeah, can we please introduce that?
Yeah, we need to bring it in the lexicon. If you're a TikToker, make viral videos about how it needs to become a necessity.
I mean, I like kids, I like some kids, but annoying kids on airplanes, I can't. Like, even noise cancellation in my headphones cannot cancel the noise of kids.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Like, you can't do anything about babies sometimes because they're babies, But some of them are old enough where they do know better and they're just, like, out to ruin your day, kind of.
But I get upset of the parents because there's too many parents who are not telling the kids to behave. Like, come on. I feel like this, curling parents? Is that what you say? In Sweden, we call them...
Or like curling helicopter parents.
Yeah, maybe. In Sweden, we call them curling parents. It's like they will do... Like, they won't tell you off whether you're doing something wrong. They just they will make the bed for you.
Yeah.
They will... If you're screaming on an airplane, they will just... and give you more candy, basically.
I mean, I get it, because it's like parenting isn't easy. And the airport, even as like if you show up as a young single person, is one of the most stressful experiences you'll have your week. So to Definitely. Deal with that on top of having to bring one or more kids and deal with a spouse that you may or may not hate, like it's probably just a lot of stress. But then at that point, when you check out, you check it out for everybody on the plane and you're like, oh my God. But let's talk about the labels, because you mentioned that, and I think that's a really big thing.
So I launched Forum Records, which is my own label that I started 2 years ago, right after we had our last podcast episode. And it's been really fun to work on that. Just like reaching out to producers that I admire and that I think represents current sound and maybe this sound of the future. Like every time I consider signing someone to the label, obviously I want them to fulfill loads of criteria, but the main one is, will this still sound good in a couple of years?
It's a good criteria.
Yeah, because lately, the past couple of years, obviously been digging loads, and I just find that a lot of music just doesn't age well.
Mm-mm.
And I mean, this has always been a thing. You know, there's tons of music throughout history that, you know, worked at a certain time, and that was like the sound of that era. But now more than ever, I feel like there's like, a lot of stuff just doesn't age well. So yeah, I try to keep that in mind, and it's been really fun. It's obviously a big satisfaction to, like, you know, go into Berghain and you hear other DJs playing music from the label. I actually have, I don't know when this episode is going to be released, but
probably in the next week or two, if you're all right with that.
Yeah. So yeah, Red Room's EP will be out next Thursday, 21st of May. And then after that, I'm working with a really cool Dutch artist called Sifonophora. She has a sound that reminds me a little bit of like Berghain Techno 2015.
Okay.
Like
a little more progressive and spaced out.
Very. Super deep, quite heady, but still like has this round kick, and just the stuff that she's sent me, I've been like, whoa, we have to do something. And so that's gonna probably be out end of summer if everything goes well. And also working with various others, producers from all over the world.
You've had like Connor Wall on, Regent, and who else am I?
Phil Berg was the first one. Yeah. So these are like pretty young producers that's been in the industry for a couple of years. That I think, you know, also you want to work with people who are pretty easy to communicate with. And
that's one of the big factors.
You know, because you receive quite a lot. I receive quite a lot of demos from various producers, and you know, I don't want to be that person, but if I've had like a questionable experience, like attitude problem or something like that, then I don't want to work with that person.
No, totally, it's not worth it.
No,
you know, like
I mean, you have NME Records, and you must be. Like, what's your approach to, like, working with producers and stuff?
Pretty much the same. You know, if somebody I already knew was difficult, I just didn't deal with it. Because even, like, in the days of, like, working in the office and stuff, when it came to business, I never really wanted to be... I was very cautious with people if I was going to be their partner or not. Because it's like, you don't want to be the guy that you look at the phone and you see this person's name and you're like, oh my God, I don't want to answer this.
Yep.
You know? And I kind of feel that same way for the label. You know, for the most part, everybody on my label has been pretty cool. there was one person that, like, you know, we were out at dinner and they treated the wait staff pretty poorly. And after that, I was like, okay, no more.
Who was that?
I'm not saying on the podcast, but I was like, okay, that's it for Enemy Records. You know?
Yeah, I think that's a...
You gotta be a decent person. And I think, you know, honestly, even when you talk about touring musicians in any genre, skill is really important, but anybody that's been in it for years would be like, the hang is also equally important, because this person, if they make you miserable on the road, you don't want to travel with them.
Definitely. You know, so. And I think, you know, before an EP or an album is being released, you have a pretty close, like a working relationship with these people, and you want to enjoy the process.
Yeah.
And you also want to be able to give feedback. And I mean, you know, so some producers are not going to want to hear that feedback and going to be like, you know, not open to make any changes. And that to me is also, you know, you have to find a common ground where it's like, you have to think as a label owner, you want to think what's best for the label, but you also want to be like, you also want to push the artist in a way where it's like, come on, I know this will work, just trust me on this. And you have a lot of producers who are not even open to consider like making certain changes, and that for me is like, that's not how I want to work. But that's fine, you know.
Notes, development notes and stuff, that's always been a hot topic, I think, forever for anybody. And of course, okay, get down, sorry, one of my cats is trying to become a third guest here. Get down. Anyway, sorry about that. You can just tap her on the face. She'll disappear. Aww. Always trying to get in on the action. Okay. So, you know, when I first started off, I started making records when I was real young. The first one came out when I was 20, but we were kind of doing demos and stuff by the time I was 18. And when a label would send over notes like, oh, you should turn this sound up or turn it down or blah, blah, blah. And just like, no. This is my vision, you know, all cocky. Like, this is the way it has to be. I hated when notes came in. I hated it. Then as I got older, I started to see the other side of it too, where I was like telling people like, you know, this hi-hat is too loud or something, or this track is only 3 minutes. It needs to be six or something. And so now not only am I giving people notes when necessary, but I actually don't mind them from the label. And I think it's just about like any sort of communication in life where you're like, all right, I'm open to hearing your suggestions. Doesn't mean I'm going to take them, but let's be valid, see if it's valid and go from there.
Yeah, I think communication is really important. And I try to always make a point of like, I don't want to change the music itself. I want to just make it sound a little bit better.
Yeah.
Enhance it. And I think, like, you know, I work with a couple of producers who comes from cities that doesn't have, you know, proper club infrastructure. And like, you know, I'm in clubs every single weekend. I have like a perspective where I know what works.
Exactly. You're playing good parties on good sound systems.
And, you know, when I try to tell this bedroom producers, you know, the idea is great, but maybe we can like shorten this hook, extend this intro, I don't know, figure out a moment. Like, there's so many things that you can like you want to emphasize the idea is good, but let's do some tweaks here and there. And if they're like totally against that idea, then I'm just like, yeah, I don't think it's going to work for my label, because, you know, obviously, like,
totally.
In the end, my label and your label as well, you know, we want them to be played in nightclubs by the, you know, by DJs and in the best sound systems. And but it's I think with anything you do in life, even if you have an office job, you have to work with people that you sort of, it's all about communication, basically.
Absolutely, you know?
And,
I get it, because it's like, people kind of when they get excited or things are going a little hot for them, they kind of get a little ego going or something. And it's like, yeah, cool, I get it. But like, just wait, you know, I know you can't see the view from where I'm looking, but you should come up here and have a look.
Yeah,
you
know? yeah. No, definitely.
So I was going to ask if there's anything that you found maybe surprising or more difficult than you expected, but it sounds like maybe that's an aspect of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, you mean with running the label?
Yeah. You know, just where you're like, okay, this is different than what I thought it would be in some regards.
No, so far, so good. I mean, there's been some like deadline challenges, of course. You know, my initial goal with the label was to have 3 to 4 releases every year.
Mm-hmm.
That's been really hard to achieve because, you know, the record has to be finished and then you're sending them to mastering and then maybe we're not happy with the master. Like there's just, mm-hmm. there's...
You have to surrender to the what's available to you.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Like I, it's kind of crazy. This year I have almost a release a month right now.
Oh, label, do you?
Which is like the busiest it's ever been. Because usually for my label, it's like 3 or 4
a year. Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I heard someone that's doing like label management for me now too, like the day-to-day stuff and whatnot. So it's like kind of just signing some things and, you know, sometimes a lot of things fall in your lap at once and sometimes you kind of like sitting like, well, what am I going to put out? There's nothing coming in.
Yeah.
And now it's the point where it's like, I actually have new tunes of my own. And I'm like, well, when can I put this stuff out on my own label?
Yeah. You know?
But, and I was kind of concerned because it's like, that's a lot of releases, but it's a variety of different things. And I think the quality is pretty consistently high throughout. So I'm willing to do it because cool. I was pretty self-aware. And I'm like, fuck that is borderline too much for anybody, really.
But didn't want to space it out? Like, have 6 this year and, like, 6 next year? Or
I mean, like, I don't want to sit on people's music for more than, you know, a year is already too much.
Yeah, and, that's true.
And now, like, not that trends don't really matter, but it's like there's things that will sell better at certain times. And it's like if you wait too long, then you ruin it.
Yeah.
And then that defeats the purpose for the artist and yourself and potentially your bank account. And,
yeah, no, you know? Definitely. So. I mean, the Red Rooms EP, for example, that, I mean, I have a label manager, my partner, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, without him, I would not be able to have the label running as smooth as it is. So with the Red Rooms, me and Dominic have been in touch for a couple of months. I mean, I've known him for quite some time. And he sent me some stuff. And I was like, hey, let's do an EP right now before the summer. Skip the test press.
Just jump right in, huh?
Yeah. And I love being able to do that, you know, mm-hmm. just like... Let's squeeze this in. Let's have it out now. I think the time is now, you know. You also don't want to sit with music for too long because you don't want to lose the momentum for that artist per se. Or
yeah, I get it. I mean, like, so maybe it was 2018 or 19, definitely before the pandemic, I did this EP called Tiny Shocks. And that was sort of a similar moment where you're just like you get a bug up your ass like let's do this right now.
Yeah,
you know? Like, and I because this was at a period where Kanye West, he's kind of a little Nazi now, but at that point he didn't quite lose his mind and he was like, I'm gonna do, I forget what it was, he was saying he was doing like an album a week or something. He released
five albums
in 5 weeks. He did, yeah, and to varying degrees of success, but he would just like record the shit and then it was like it was coming out. Like, I'm not gonna overthink it. And I'm like, that's insane, which it was because he is insane.
Yeah.
But there was something about it that I was like, that's kind of cool. And then I was also facing this thing where I wanted to get something out right away. I was like, otherwise it's, you know, the summer and then you wait 3 months and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I'm going to put something out on Friday or whatever the fuck it was. I had Safira do artwork. I pulled together some tracks and boom, it was out. And actually, did really well.
Yeah.
You know, and I put zero thought into it. Meanwhile, I have a record I'll put out in October maybe that I've been sitting on since August last year, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a little slow.
Yeah. No, but it's exciting when you sort of like, all right, okay, let's do it now. Let's just have it out by, you know, we're manufacturing records. Let's just have it out. Mastering is booked, da-da-da-da. And then when it's sort of, yeah, when the feedback is good from the public, then it's just, yeah, I find that really exciting. I mean, now with Bandcamp and social media, I mean, say what you want to say with all of that, but I think it's an amazing tool to have, and you can put up so many great music in just a short period of time. Without like, yeah, you can just do everything by yourself, really. So
absolutely. You know, it's funny because all the younger kids really love to abuse the word gatekeeping.
Oh, it's like, yeah.
Now there's arguably less gatekeeping than ever. It's so easy to take an idea and put it into reality, into the world.
Oh, but there's so much bad stuff out there now.
Yeah, that's the downside of it, of course. Yeah, you know?
I mean, I understand the purpose of gatekeeping.
I think there's benefits to it from time to time.
Yeah, you know? And I understand the purpose of not gatekeep. I think you need a balance of both.
Yeah, I mean, there's the English saying it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
But people are the slope, and not all people are the brightest people.
No, exactly. Not everyone should be a music producer. Not everyone should be a DJ. Not everyone should be a politician. Not, you know, there's, yeah, I feel like there's no filters anywhere, which in many ways makes things harder to find the good stuff. But yeah.
Like we were saying before, the whole gatekeeping thing, the barrier for entry is really low. So you can get in, and it's a lot of people that are able to get pretty good sounding ideas. Well, I don't even know if they're ideas, but like grooves going right away. But
hate that word, groove.
We'll get into that. But then basically, because they're just shuffling it through so quickly, you don't have to think about it too deeply. So your personality isn't really coming through in there. Yeah, you know?
Definitely.
So, but you brought it up. Let's talk about techno today.
Yeah.
Oh, the current state.
Yeah. I want to be positive, and I am a positive person, but I feel like techno is in a dire state.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's perpetually in that, but right now it feels a little more depressive considering it is experiencing a nice sizable wave of popularity at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's almost paradoxical in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I think techno has become so popular. Like neighbors of mine would be quite into going to techno parties now, and before they would like obviously not be interested. Like, you know, this entire Berghain phenomena, people want to go to Berghain to experience the spectacle, but like, you know, there's so many of us who go there because it's like literally one of very few places where we can like see friends, listen to great music, and just be surrounded with like good sound system. And yeah, I think I often think like, you know, what made me get involved in this like techno community, what made me start listening to techno, and it was like this entire mystery, like you had to find the parties, you needed to really dig for the music.
Yeah.
And now it's just I feel like a lot of people who start to DJ today, they start to DJ because they like the attention more than they actually like the music.
Yeah.
It's weird. I have so many people coming up to me and they're like, what can I do to gain my profile? And I always say, well, like, just dig through music. Don't think about it like people like following you, because that will come secondary. Like, do you have love for music first and foremost?
You know, yes, you're a more recent talent, but it's like you really kind of just fell into it. You know, I've known you since you're a teenager.
I know.
All of a sudden, shit, you're on the road more than me and half my friends put together. And
yeah,
it's like,
Dustin, you were like the hottest shit back then.
Yeah, well, now I'm just old.
No, but I remember. I remember we also talked about this on the previous podcast that we had 2 years ago. Like, I mean, when the drum code parties were happening at Berghain, you were playing at them, I think, quite a lot. And yeah, you were touring loads. And I remember that time very vividly because, I mean, how old was I? I'm early 20s. And I mean, techno at that stage, you know, Berghain techno, that was like an actual genre.
Yeah.
Berlin techno was an actual genre.
Yeah, it's interesting what people classified that as and didn't, but it was a people referring to that.
Well, yeah. And I you know, I don't want to sound like it was better before, but I'm mentally still, I take a lot of inspiration from that time.
Of course, yeah.
Because it was so freer than today, and today is still free in many ways, but you had less rules.
Less judgment across the
board. Yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, we had pretty similar, a lot of overlapping in the friends' social circle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and like, it was just, so of course for us, it was a time and a place, and I'm sure there are people now who feel like they're having that moment too. But
yeah, exactly.
I think at that point still, you know, algorithms became a thing in 2016 primarily. You know, so prior to that, you still had social media and stuff, but it was showing things chronologically and if you followed it or not.
Yeah, true.
So it's like, you know, you kind of still had to search things out. That was like the tail end of that.
Yeah.
You know, and now you can open up a social media app and you see someone playing on a video thing in London or, you know, some whatever random rave and everybody's like got their shirts off and it's the Matrix and they're like throwing kicks for Jesus and shit.
Yeah,
and you're like, well, this is better than what I'm doing, which is sitting at home. How do I do this? You know?
Yeah, definitely. But I miss how small the scene was. I mean, it was still big. It was international, but it was cozy.
It's weird because, you know, like really old school days, like, you know, the 90s, late 90s and stuff, techno was also wildly popular. Well, all this music and a lot of records were selling, but you would have a lot of DJs would be on the road nonstop. And I mean, of course the fees these days are bigger because of inflation, but also just fucking bigger for various reasons. But there was, you know, you maybe played 8 times a month, but the fees were much smaller, but there was always gigs to be had. And now it's like there's so many people that do this that are super talented that don't get to hit the road. And the road is kind of reserved for like 30 to 40 people that are the it names of the moment, even though it's arguably bigger in some ways now. So it's a weird thing to...
I feel like promoters or bookers, they don't want to take risks because, you know, they need to sell out their clubs. So they take the safe cards and or safe bets. And I think it's a shame that, you know, there's so many DJs that are really great that are not getting, you know, booked as often anymore because they're not cool anymore with the young kids.
Yeah.
And I feel like lineups in festivals and various places, they're, you know, I feel like people are playing the same stuff.
There is largely a lot of that, yeah.
And I'm missing this, like, I want to be challenged on the dance floor and I don't want to be challenged by someone who just started DJing a year ago. I want to be challenged by someone who's done this for a while and, that has that capacity. And I think, you know, a lot of young, just starting DJs are... they are part of a lot of lineups that I'm playing on, and it's really fun to, you know, see how excited they are and such. But I'm also like, wow, you do not know how to master, I don't know, an opening and a closing slot, for example.
Yeah.
We had this discussion on the last episode, I remember that. But, I mean, yeah, I feel like everyone just want to play the peak hours, the peak slots now. And I think if you cannot enjoy an opening slot, for example, then I don't think you should be a DJ, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, well,
harsh thing to say.
I don't know if you have to thoroughly enjoy it, but you should be able to manage that. You know what I mean? I feel like everybody should be able to play each spot, because then you understand what the party's all about. Then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just kind of like there's this thing where it's like, oh, this person has worked every spot in the restaurant, and now they know the business inside and out, or whatever.
Yeah,
and I think there's something to that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little idealistic. I don't know, but I'm old school. I can say that.
Yeah,
so,
no, it's a good point of view.
I think there's a lot of people who they buy into hype, which is fine, because some of those people become lifelong fans, and others they just kind of go on to whatever other genre after they are done partying. But you know what I've noticed is, like, dance floors, they're more chattier than ever.
Oh yes, I mean, especially the dance floors that didn't used to be.
Yeah, I
like
mean
that.
You know, this weekend Luke Slater, he's doing his live thing, and the first half was like pretty deep.
Yeah.
And it was slam, because it's Luke Slater. He's a badass, you know? And like, these fucking people around me would not shut up. And I'm like,
yeah,
you know, what do you need to engage in this? You know what I mean? Like, you're here clearly for a reason. Like, we all kind of pushed onto the floor. And then as the bigger kick drums kicked in and then the hands in the air, then it wasn't so much the chatty people. Then it's like the muscular dudes without the shirts on, and they're like, broder, moving around, like pushing through the crowd, like, just, it's like, I'm gonna step out to the side here. This is too much, you know?
It's a shame. I mean, I love going out dancing, although it's hard for me to do that nowadays when I'm touring on the weekends. But I went out not that long ago, and I stayed in the club for, 10 plus hours, let's put it that way. And the majority of the time, people were just chatting on the dance floor. And I wish I was someone that tell people to, like, hey, go to the bar and talk. Like, I mean, for me, the dance floor is pretty, it's like a sacred place, you know. I go there to meet friends, dance with friends, but I don't talk, like, and you go there to, like, release tension or whatever, close your eyes, like, you want to go into a state of trance, whatever. I think that, you know, Bergen is really good. Bergen, for example, this was at Bergen, if I didn't mention that, but Bergen are very good at, like, you know, having the, you know, you're not allowed to take pictures, which is a great rule, but I think they need to implement that. You're not supposed, like, not allowed to talk.
Shut the hell up. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, and it's like with the bigger the acts, the more I feel like it's the more chatty it is, because there's a lot of people that are just showing up to see what it's about. It's not really, it's hard for, like, the real heads to get in and lock in, because it's a spectacle.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a shame.
Especially with,
shame,
like, deeper music. You get like a deeper DJ on, which is requires nuances over fireworks, and they're like, oh, wait, what did you do this weekend? It's like,
oh,
dude,
my God.
Shut up.
Yeah. I hate that. And, like, you know, I if I'm not in the middle of the dance floor, sometimes I hang on the side between the booth and the bar. And that's, like, a sweet spot for, like, you know, you can hear the music, but you can also be chatty to someone without interrupting, you know. I don't know.
I get roped into too many shots over there.
Yeah, it does happen to me too. But sometimes if I hear, like, a really fat track and someone is starting to, like, have a conversation with me, I always be like, dude, can we just not talk right now? Can we
just listen? I gotta go.
Or I just say, I gotta go. I gotta go to the bathroom and then I just sneak into the middle of the dance floor. But yeah, no, I'm with you. I think, yeah, I think a lot of people actually go out and don't know the etiquette exactly.
Yeah.
And but then what you do, like, I'm not the one who is like going up to a stranger and be like, hey, can you shut up? Like,
yeah. I mean, I
count
can.
On that other people do that for me.
I can. The problem is sometimes you need someone to be the bad cop. But also then there's times where I do it and then it turns out they're really drunk or high and didn't realize. And they're sort of like the other
yeah.
guy's like, do you mind? I'm trying to fucking party yeah. here. You know, and this guy's like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, and they're like, oh, I didn't expect a well-mannered response. I expected like,
I actually realized something. Like, I remember quite often, this was like a while ago. It hasn't happened to me in a while, but I used to have people coming up to me on the dance floor telling me to smile.
Now, was it because you're a girl or?
Yeah, I don't know. I think so, probably. But I would have women and men coming up to me while I'm, you know, I'm on the dance floor doing Crunch and Tiger Hidden Dragon.
Like, I don't owe you anything.
No, and like... and I would always be like, obviously I didn't want to start having an argument with this person. I would just tell them to F off, basically.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Like, I'm smiling inside. And even if I'm not smiling, like, come on, I'm in trance here. I just thought it was such a weird thing to
you
say.
You do you, yeah.
Like, I don't know you. Like, yeah. Why? Like, imagine me coming up to you, Dustin, like, you should smile more. I think it's such a weird thing to say. And it only happened on dance floors. In Berlin, actually, never.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've been going out mostly in Berlin also.
Yeah.
So maybe that's
possible. I mean, I know, like, that's a thing for women. It's just guys trying to hit on
weird.
Girls and shit, which is
so weird.
Up,
like, but, F off.
Yeah. I mean, I actually had this thing. I read, I don't know if it was on Instagram or Reddit or something. I played somewhat recently, and I'm pretty sure it was about me because they didn't say my name, but the description. Well, I guess all of us like white guys look the same. But basically, they're like, oh, he looked really bored up there. And I know for a fact in that time I was not bored at all. I was really enjoying it because I was when I played at Basement. But I was like really – some of these mixes that I try to do are really hard to pull off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know – like, it's just DJ, and I get it, but, like, some of these things where it's like, okay, I have the percussion on one, I got the strings on another, like, I'm putting three or four things together, and I really have to pay attention.
Yeah.
So, like, if I'm not, like, hands in the air or fucking doing shots or whatever, it's because I'm, like,
focusing?
I'm, like, yeah, and especially if you've already had a couple of drinks, you're like, I need to focus a little harder to keep this on the rails
No,
that happens.
I get that.
You know?
Like, I'm definitely not a hands in the air DJ, and I am that on the dance floor, but behind the decks, I probably look bored as fuck, but I'm just thinking about the next step.
You got the riz on the decks, as the kids say. Do they still say that?
What's,
I don't know.
What?
The riz, charisma.
Oh, do I?
I think so.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think every time I look at myself on like streams or pictures or Instagram stories, I'm like, Jesus, I look so boring. But it's because, you know, I'm always thinking.
We're our own worst critics. But yeah, it takes
thought.
Yeah.
And I sometimes do admire those who like... you know, have the cool moves. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
I just don't have
that swagger, you know, the confidence in it, all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's like, listen, let's face it. There's some people that are like, when it comes to, they just play the game like they're kind of hacks. They have ghost producers or whatever, but they are technically great performers. They show up on the stage. They're smiling like those people wanted you to do. They, you know, they fucking pull up the finger guns. They're looking good. They play whatever big track is of the moment. And then they go get their 15K and go home or something, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's more to it than just being able to put on the show, you know.
Yeah. No, I respect.
But what do you think about, let's say, like, expectations versus reality with, like, fellow DJs and promoters and... I mean, you know, do crowds expect too much or too little? Or
I'm noticing that there is an expectation. I think the more bookings you get, the bigger shows you get, the better the slots you get, I think people expect you to deliver. And I expect that of myself as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you vibe with the, you know, for me, it's like, if I'm comfortable in the booth, then that's the best sort of scenario. And even in like really great festivals that you wouldn't expect booth being shit, if the booth is shit, I have a hard time enjoying myself.
Which does happen a lot.
Yeah. More than you would think. And but it's not like you can write that on Instagram appreciation posts. Like,
exactly.
There's a lot of things that I think people don't really realize. Also, like, you're sleep deprived. You maybe, maybe you're hormonal.
Exactly.
As a woman, you go through every month various phases. That can be really, really brutal. And
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it really affects you in a bad way. Sometimes it affects you in a really good way. But yeah, there's so many elements that comes with DJing that people are really not talking about. And I think, what was the question?
Well, just, you know, the expectations, but it, I guess generally, at least with the crowd, they want you to deliver.
Yeah.
Which I get it. I mean, like, if you go to, I don't know, whatever, Paris this weekend, they don't care if your dog died on Tuesday.
No.
They want you to rock it. I mean, of course, they would be like, oh, that's sad. But they're like, you have to rock it now, right? You know?
Yeah, and the thing is that even if, let's say, I'm going through something privately, I can, I find, like, playing music on a lounge system, that can be, like, quite nice.
Therapeutic,
Oh, definitely. And, like, I often, when I have those moments, I often say to the booker, if the booker is present on the night, like, hey, thank you for booking me. I really needed this.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's an amazing life in many ways. You get to, making people dance is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Making people dance on music that you've collected throughout the years. I mean, holy shit, is this really what I'm doing? Like, it's a dream, really.
Yeah, there's enough to get negative about, which it's really, because negative emotions affect everybody, it's the strongest emotions. But like, when you do see everything goes well and it's a great night, or things are really popping off, and then you're like, oh yeah, you forget like how amazing it is.
Yeah,
but then it's like a drug, because you're like, well, now I want to do it again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can sometimes, I find like, if I have too many weekends in a row without a break, I can get super overwhelmed with like, I need a break from this life as well. Like, you can. If I am not excited going to a club, I know that, okay, I probably should like have a break, a weekend break at least. And every time I have a weekend of not touring, I'm like dying to get back again. You also have to think like, there's so many DJs out there. There's so many incredible DJs out there. You don't know how long you're going to be playing for, and you just want to take every, you want to like, enjoy every
savor
moment.
It. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because, as you know, you can blow up really quickly and it can actually implode just as quickly for those that get canceled. It's literally overnight, but even if just trends change and what you're doing isn't the thing anymore, it goes down quickly. So it's weird because on one hand, if you're hitting the road and doing 6 to 8+ gigs a month, it's one thing to be like, you know what, I'm just going to stay in my hotel room in London this weekend because I'll be back in 4 months or whatever. But then there's at some point, the last time does become the last time. Or those trips you get to go once every few years or something. And then you're like, fuck. So the balance is really just trying to appreciate all that stuff when you can.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah, definitely. So, yeah, definitely enjoying the moment.
You mentioned earlier you hate the word groove. I imagine it's related to hard groove, aka hard boredom. But
yeah, I think that word has been overused. I mean, there is groove in most techno or like electronic.
Hopefully,
yeah. I mean, that's like the one of the bases of at least the music that I'm into. I think this entire, like, you know, you have parties that are promoting groove techno, and I think what it represents is like pretty like techno that has no depth.
Yeah,
it just has groove, and for me techno is like, I love the depth in music, techno music. I love the
nuances and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm missing that. Where is the depth? Where is it's flat. It's groovy, but it's flat as fuck.
It's just kind of rolling. There's like a chopped up female vocal sample every and then it's like fast rolling. And
it's not taking me to a place mentally.
Yeah.
I'm just
it's very surface level.
Very surface level. Yeah. And I do
see it,
it's not for me.
Sort of changing for the positive though. Like I know like a lot of the people in my microcosm of techno, you know, got you like Renee Wise or Marcel Alton Boss, Nobu, any of those types of people, they're all playing like a little slower, groovier now. And of course, you know, when people like Nobu or whatever, they are more mental, but it's not just like fast clubby where it's just kick drums.
No, definitely. I mean, the Japanese DJs are really good with that, like Wate Igarashi
is one of the best.
DJ Sodeyama. It's so mental, and it takes me to a place that no one can take me to. So I think I'm lacking that in Europe. I feel like a lot of DJs who are being booked right now just play like this flat grooves.
Yeah, and a lot of these younger
not
kids,
to hate.
No, a lot of these younger kids keep saying minimal techno is coming back like herpes, and I lost interest in it the first time it blew up, and I will not be interested in it this time around either.
Yeah, I think maybe melodic techno would come back.
I mean, it kind of already is around, but like it's doing all that like. What is it with like the angel bouncing around on the screen and shit? The guys from Tale of Us,
Anima?
That kind of stuff.
Is that what Anima? Yeah.
Ame and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, if you're meaning melodic as in like Detroit techno and whatnot, I think that would be cool. You know, so a little bit of soul injected into everything. Yeah. And
please, you know. I need some soul. Back in music, because it's driving me crazy.
But other than that, I continuously find cool things to play in all the records that are coming out today and everything. And actually, I have to say, the crowds that I do get to play for, they're pretty open to shit.
Mm.
That's what people don't realize, is that they just need to realize that it's an option.
Yeah.
You know, like what day is it? Tuesday? Saturday morning, technically, I played 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., and I started off at 1:36, and then I ended the morning at 1:30. And people are really responsive to that, but they just have to be shown the way.
Definitely. Where were you playing?
Pax Romana at Radeon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so really cool stuff. And that's like a crowd that really allows you to play a little bit of whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I had some funkier stuff, some of the wormhole techno and all that.
Cool.
And,
it's a good slot also to play. I like playing that slot.
Yeah, me too. It's like people are kind of loose and sloppy and fun, and it's not like, it's serious, but also like not too serious. You know what I mean? It's like I like it when the peak of the night is over and the expectations have all kind of came and went. People are not hoping and waiting for something. They're just kind of in cruise control.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like anybody that was going to like get too wasted, they already took off and went home or they're hooking up or whatever. So now you're just left with the freaks.
And
That's my kind of people.
I love that. I love that. I actually, as a club goer, I also love... 8 o'clock in the morning and you're pretty tired and exhausted, but your body is still like, you still want to dance. And
then
when the DJ is able to like honor that slot with like weird rhythms and
stuff you don't normally hear.
Yeah. It can
be. What do you think about this?
Yeah, exactly.
And you're delicate enough where you're like, okay, because it really is incredible how certain records you play will have wildly different effects at certain times of night. Obviously, a big room track works at peak time, but not at the opening, but maybe just something that's really deep and fluffy.
Yeah.
You know, at different parts of the night will have drastically different effects.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, yeah, you have to... I love thinking about that. Like, obviously I'm playing, I would say Berghain or like clubs like Bassiani or RSO are clubs that are open during those hours. And, there's still a lot of expectation. There's still a lot of people on the dance floor. And I love when I'm given the opportunity to play on those slots, because you obviously treat it differently than a 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. slot, basically.
I mean, of course, you're still on your ascent towards whatever it will be, but do you feel like you're getting the right slots and placement that you feel like you really want to be playing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I always have an ongoing dialogue with my agent about if there's a slot I feel like it's, for that lineup, maybe I should be on that slot. I will always suggest that. But I think, I wish I did more opening slots.
Interesting.
I understand why it's, a lot of clubs, if they're booking an international DJ, they don't want to put them in the first slot. But, I always tell my, I'm playing in Ibiza now.
Where are you playing there, or is it not announced?
Amnesia.
Ah, okay.
And
which party is that?
It's Joseph Capriati's.
Okay, cool.
Metamorphosis.
Okay.
And they gave me the option to open or close. And I said opening, because I do a lot of closing sets.
Yeah.
And I think I would enjoy playing the closing set a lot, but I wanna open that venue. I think that would be so cool.
Are you in the main room or the terrace?
I think I'm in the main room.
Okay, yeah, that probably tracks. So.
Have you played there?
I haven't played there. I've partied my ass off there back
in
the day.
Yeah, I bet.
But, yeah. No, it's, I mean... There's a lot to dislike about Ibiza, but there's also things about it that I find very fascinating at the very least.
I've never been there. I'm so excited to go. And obviously, I think my perception of Ibiza is, paying 10 euros for a water bottle.
10? You wish it's that cheap. I don't know what it is now.
Oh,
I think
really?
I think it was 10 euros probably 15 years ago.
It's more than that?
I haven't been the last time I went was for a mutual friend of ours' wedding out there, and that was 2017, 18,
yeah,
16, something like that.
Yeah.
And after that, I was just looking around, and I enjoyed myself, but everything was getting so expensive, and everything was getting a little too commercialized. Where I'm I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think also living in Berlin, you're so used to partying in a certain way. And then you go to a big sort of party island like Ibiza, I think. Yeah.
I kind of like it a little rough around the edges.
Yeah, you know, I'm the same. I like it punk. Yeah. I like when people are not dressed up and look like they've been out for days.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's an aspect of that I do like. In fact, I would say it's a shame that nobody really dresses up at all anymore. But also, like, right now, like, band t-shirts and black jeans and, you know, like, I like all that kind of stuff too. So I just... I'm a chameleon. I like to go everywhere and just see what I can get into.
Yeah, so. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm definitely with you. As long as you're, I think, feel like comfort is the most important thing.
Well, that's kind of the thing. I started going to this stuff where, like, you know, a lot of the people that we know who've really go on to become massive superstars or whatever. It's like, while I have still good connection with someone, I'm like, what are we connecting on a human level right now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and if I feel like I can't connect, then I just kind of start hanging around people that I feel like are more my people.
Yeah, you know what I mean? The same.
You know, like I can do a night of hanging out, like, oh, it's good to catch up or whatever. But I'm like, this is not my world.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah. Also in my notes here, you're coming to America. I know for sure because you're playing for me, but you got other shows going on. You got a visa now.
Yeah, I have a visa now. Thank God. That was a long process.
Yeah.
Expensive process.
It's very expensive.
Jesus Christ.
It's a depressing topic in general.
Yeah, I feel bad for, like, I mean, obviously there's a lot of great American DJs who lives in the US and it's good to support your local scene, but I feel bad for clubs that they are not able to book, you know, any international DJ who are not a superstar. You know, there's so many DJs who can't afford to pay that amount to go there.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough because the American scene right now really actually reminds me heavily of Italy around 10 to 2015 or 16. Meaning it was like there was kind of a bubble, it was exploding. Everybody was like getting gigs. Then there were some people, every weekend you came home, you go out to your little DJ and they're like, did you hear so-and-so got 30K for Coco Rico or whatever shit? And you're like, oh, how is this happening? And then, of course, overnight, the scene just implodes.
Right.
I mean, there's some parties in Italy now, but nothing compared to what it used to be.
Is Coco Rico still open, by the way?
I think so. Mm. I have no clue what they're doing. It might be like hard techno stuff, I honestly have no clue. You know, I see that with America now where it's like there's a lot of parties going on and once in a great while you hear about some of these DJs just like somehow getting approved on wild offers where you're like, how is this even happening? How is this possible in America? Like, there's no way this promoter can actually make that money back.
Right.
Or, you know, they just barely break even.
Right.
And so it's, long story short, it's not sustainable.
Mm, yeah.
So I think it's fun for now. We'll see what happens. Private equity is now in the US techno scene. And I think the problem with that is that you have agents that they think that's the new normal. So then they come up to other like promoters that have been doing this for years or will continue to do it. And they're like, well, this is what my person's getting now. And it's like, not with us.
I think, I mean, for me, the most important thing is like having, I think if a club can pay you shit ton of money, it's probably not the club you want to be playing at.
Generally speaking, but also it's pretty hard to turn down one night, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course.
I always say, like, you can't buy me, but you can rent me.
I mean, I've actually been offered quite cool shows for quite some. I mean, cool shows, I wouldn't say they're cool shows, but shows that
big
would,
shows.
Yeah, and I would turn them down because if I'm not excited to be playing at a party, I don't want to be, I'd rather be at home with my partner and chill, like.
Mm-hmm.
Money is nice in many ways, but if I'm not excited, then it's not fun.
I get it. I totally agree. It's like,
and also, how much money do you need in the world? Like, I feel I don't know. You don't need. It's not for me. I respect people who do that, but you know.
Well, the thing is, on a side note, you know, taxes in both Germany and Sweden are extremely high.
Yep.
I don't know where you're paying, but both countries are high.
Yep.
And it's like after a certain point financially, which is actually surprisingly low, you're kind of like, why should I work so hard?
Yeah.
Because I'm just giving away 40% of my money.
Yeah.
You know?
No, exactly.
That's kind of where I drew my line. And I'm like, I had a lot of different things, which is why I kind of just took a seat for a while. But I was just like, well, I work so hard and I just gave this away.
Yeah.
Like, I could work less and still have a decent amount of money and have more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm definitely with you. I also feel like, you know, as much as DJing is fun, it needs to be like in a controlled amount. Because I know if I do it too much and if I'm doing shows that I wouldn't be excited to play, then I would just not enjoy it at all. I'd rather just be at home and dig for music.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, I have a pretty affordable rent. I take my bicycle to places. I don't own a car. I have a pretty low-cost life, so it's a pretty nice position to be like, yeah, don't need that. That's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I think Berlin also allows you to have that lifestyle still. I mean, things are getting more expensive.
Getting tougher,
yeah, definitely. But I feel very fortunate to, like, you know, I have an old flat contract. I'm not paying tons of money that I know others do, which is crazy to me. And I think, just having like a humble lifestyle allows you to say no to things that you would not be excited to do.
It's really easy to get wrapped up. I mean, you know, some of our mutual, whatever, what's the word I'm looking for? Comrades or whatever. They get wrapped up in it and they start spending serious money or
private
putting people
jets
on their payroll. And it's just like, all right, you're in it now. You don't have a choice.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I mean, you know, I respect that. But that to me, just more problems.
Yeah,
more
exactly.
Money, more problems.
Yeah, 100%.
So, I think it's, you know, I see a lot of DJs, fellow DJ friends who are very booked and very busy, and you know, they have a tour manager and private jets maybe, and buying a fancy car and all that stuff, and I'm like, it's not for me.
Yeah,
like that's just stress, you
it's
know?
A lot to consider.
And I feel like you need to, artistically, you need to like compromise on a lot of things, because then you're doing shows where it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
how can you be experimental? And I feel like there's no room for experiments.
When I played a bunch of the, not official drum code shows, but like shows that were like, we want to book a drum code DJ, like back in the day, you know, I'd play... I wouldn't tailor my sets to do things, but there's things I would leave out a lot of the time. And I'm just like, well, I know I can't play this weird ass record, or like at that time, hey, get down, buddy.
Hey.
You can just push them off. Like a shifted record or something. That isn't going to work in a crowd of 2,000 people in Italy at that point.
You can just
set them down. He just loves to love.
Sorry, cat.
This is the problem with having my podcast at my flat. Now,
he likes
let's
it.
Talk about the actual part of DJing quick. When you're DJing, are you one of those people that has like to jump all over the place with the cue points and everything, or do you kind of just let it play?
It's funny that you asked me that, because now I'm actually, you know, I'm going on a US tour now for 10 days. So I've been going through my sticks quite a lot. And just thinking about how I can restructure my playlist. No, I have playlists, folders. I customize each folder to each gig. And I structure my music in a way where I have playlists that are like beginning of the night, beginning of my set, middle of my set, and the end of my set. And then I just... depending on how the night unfolds, what the crowd is in the mood for, how the sound system sounds like. Really, like, sound system is super... I try to really, like... You cannot play a Berghain set. Or, like, a set I will play at Berghain, I cannot play in, like, Paris SIM
club. It doesn't work, yeah.
No, it doesn't work. And, Yeah, so I'm quite, I have a structure that works for me, and I don't do this key, what's that called?
Mixing in key type stuff.
Yeah, for me, I've been playing with a few DJs that do that, and I just feel like the intensity is too high and low. Because the key is not, maybe they keep in mind of like the, obviously the keys, but I feel like you just, yeah, it's not for me anyways.
I get it. I mean, I play in key, or, you know, like I try to keep these things in consideration, like the music theory about it all. And I'm kind of like, there's times where I kind of wish that I never really got into that aspect,
yeah,
you know?
That's the thing.
But then there's times where I'm pulling stuff off and people are like, oh, you practice that mix, blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, oh, no, I just know that this is going to naturally go into this and it's going to create this emotion.
Yeah,
so there's a trade-off, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, no, I respect that. And I think it works for a lot of people, but I try not to, I don't use that method, basically.
So you mentioned about playing with people. How do you feel about like the current booking trend of just back-to-backs all the time?
Yeah, depends on the night, the festival, the club. I think they
who
should,
it is, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I need to like be interested in that person, and you don't vibe with everyone. And
are there people you vibe with more than others that you like? You really would be open to doing more of them or something?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been playing, I had a back-to-back with Ben Clock last year at a festival in Brussels. That was really fun. I really enjoyed that. And then I'm playing with Fadi Mohem quite a lot. That's been quite fun. He and I play quite different.
Yeah. So that's got to be interesting to see how it comes together.
Yeah, and I love that challenge.
Okay.
Because I do like a challenge.
Yeah.
And I want it to be like, I want to be like, okay, let's see how this goes. If it's too like predictable, then, I mean, it's nice when it's predictable and safe, but it's also nice when it's unpredictable, not safe, and then it turns out great.
Of course.
Yeah. And then it can also not turn out great. Like, you never know.
Yeah.
But I think context matters. I do understand that people are complete people and people. I mean, there's a topic around like there's too many back-to-backs, like that concept has been sort of beaten to death. Basically.
Yeah.
And I get that. And I say no to a lot of back-to-backs for that reason, like I also don't want to do only back-to-back shows every week. I mean,
no.
Would you? Like, you want to?
I don't really want to do back-to-backs almost ever. I mean, certain if it's, like, the right people, then I'm into it. But, like, I've done some where it's even, like, my close homies, and it's just kind of not gelling together. And it's not that I'm not, like, a lone wolf and I got to work alone. Like, I'm used to this stuff and like the band world and everything, and I actually my problem is that I find other people are not used to collaborating with others. So like if I'm playing with you tonight, like I might be like, listen, I got this one record that I'm gonna set it up for you, like I'm gonna pass you the ball and then you just knock it into the goal, and they'd be like, whoa, what do you mean? And then I deliver it to them on a plate, like all you got to do is play something fucking epic and awesome, and blow the place up, and they don't. And then I'm like, all right, I'm more of a storyteller DJ, so I guess I need people that are like willing to maybe play, you know, for lack of better wording, a boring record here or a big record there, like let's craft it, versus like we just got to fit this new shit in that I want to hear.
I'm totally with you. I think that, you know, you have to like pick up where the other person left off, and like, you know, I've been playing with DJs where I've been like, oh my God, you're not listening to what I'm playing, because what you're playing now is just not, it's not a good mix.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, everyone has their way of DJing. And I think when I started DJing, I played a lot with Johanna Schneider, whom you know also.
Oh, yeah.
We played as Stockholm Murder Girls.
That's right, yeah.
And we it was so fun to play with her because we would, like, obviously we were digging a lot of music and we had like a battle, her and I.
Because she plays quite different as well, right?
I mean, we played like hypnotic techno back then, so quite not too different to what I'm playing today. But she would be like, you have to listen to this record that I'm about to play. And I would hear that and I would be like, oh, fucking hell, that's a really good record. Listen to this record about to play. And we would have that attitude towards each other behind the decks.
But let's plug some things quickly before we head out here. You said you got a tour coming up of America. Is that this week, next week?
Yeah, so I'm flying to Toronto first to play a format on Friday. And
this Friday? Or?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay, so this is probably in the past for people.
Okay. Yeah.
But let them know anyway. Do some promotion.
Well, I'm doing Wire Festival on Saturday with D-Dan, which I'm really excited about.
That'll be a biggie.
Yeah, we're closing one of the bigger stages, so I'm really looking forward to that. I love playing with Ted.
I never see Ted around anymore.
Yeah, so. I think he's hiding in the studio.
Is he still living in Berlin? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's in the States a couple of times of the year and he stays there for quite some time. But yeah, and then next week, where am I going next week? Bogota, and then Movement Festival. You will be there.
No, actually, I will not. Usually I do a party there, but that one is not happening, but I'm playing at Berghain that weekend. So
are you?
It'll be a good one.
Fun.
Yeah. It's going to be a good time slot.
Yeah.
A long one, so.
Oh, cool. Fun.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to get back to the U.S. in July and join you at the Great Beyond.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
So looking forward to that. My gosh, I have so many people messaging me about how excited they are about.
Yeah, it'll be cool. And you can stay through Sunday too.
Yeah, I'm planning on.
Sometimes people, they just want to fill the weekend, understandably, and they got to go. And they're like, fuck, I got to go to the airport in an hour and a half and I don't want to go
So. Yeah, no. Yeah, I had, when I met your wife, we had a dancing session at Berghain. She was like, you have to stay. At least until Monday, you have to experience it. And I was done deal. Let's do that.
Easy peasy. Cool. And then you said the Red Rooms is the record's coming out this month.
Yeah, next week, 21st.
Okay. And you're also a new one on Positive Source, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's yes. That? So again? That VA is coming out.
Already out.
Oh, it's already. I'm looking at my partner. So many releases to keep track on. No, it's already out. So check that out.
Okay, cool. I'll see you this summer.
Yeah, excited.
Thanks for coming
Thank
over
Thank you for
again.
Having me.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.